Welcome to Working Title Podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Paul Kane. In this episode, I chat with comic book writer and novelist Arvin Loudermilk. Years ago, I had collected and enjoyed every bloodsucker-filled issue of the comic book called Vigil that he co-created with artist Mike Iverson. We discussed Vigil and vampires, the difference between writing comic panels and novels, persevering through complete rewrites, and more. Enjoy! But first, my debut novel, Shadows Within, is now out. A supernatural thriller, my protagonist, Reed Williams, awakens in a strange bed with the woman who murdered his beloved bride, Lily. It just gets worse from there. As Reed must deal with his grief, grapple with the darkness now within himself, and defeat those who want his soul. This is my take on the vampire genre, a way to examine the human condition. Like shadows, vampires walk beside us, but are seldom noticed. Dark twins that exaggerate our virtues and our vices. What is worth the price of one's humanity? Shadows Within can be ordered in hardcover and paperback at your favorite bookseller. The ebook is also available on Amazon. Collect all three. Visit jpkane.com for more information. And thank you.
Thanks, Josh.
Arvin Loudermilk, a writer. I was in high school when I read Vigil comic books so many years ago. And if someone had asked me or told me I would be doing a podcast and speaking with you, I wouldn't believe it because, one, I wouldn't know what a podcast was. But even so, talking with a comic book writer and one whose work I really enjoyed, that's just a kick for me. I love it. So I thank you for joining me.
You're welcome.
How did that come about? How did you, the artist was Mike Iverson, right?
Right.
Did you two know each other before the project, or you met for the project?
Well, we worked together briefly. We were both artists, and he came in with his portfolio. We were hiring another artist, and I was just blown away by his stuff, and I could tell immediately that he could draw comics, and I could just tell by his style. And, of course, me being a fairly average artist, I was definitely looking for someone to work with. And by the time that day's work was over, we were teaming up for a book. And we worked for a couple years on one series, and we really couldn't sell it. And then we decided to do something next, do something else, which was based on another character, Grace Vigil. The lead character, Grace, was originally a creation of Mike's that he did in a college strip.
Oh, okay.
And no one seemed to be interested in buying the superhero book we were doing, so we tried to do something that seemed like a superhero book but wasn't a superhero book, you know, something with adventure and crime and all that sort of stuff. And that's why I thought, well, we could take that old vampire character you have and turn her into a superhero. And that's kind of where it started.
Okay. Yeah, that's what definitely drew me into the story was the vampire nature.
Sure.
So it was, for those who aren't familiar with it, it was, I guess, a cop turned vampire against her will, Grace Kimball, correct?
Right.
And her dealing with that, trying to get back to an ordinary life while having to drink blood and so forth, and then getting in over her head, I guess, with adversaries. I thought it was really intriguing. It seemed original to me. And it was really I liked his art, Iverson's art, because it seemed very realistic.
Yes.
It seemed well suited to the type of story you were telling.
We were kind of turning the tropes on its head. We had a female lead, and her boyfriend, love interest, was a action movie star who was, you know, a complete wimp.
Yes.
So we liked kind of playing that off each other, and that's kind of where it started, and it kind of went somewhere very, very different. But, you know, that was basically the initial idea, was to keep it. I wanted to mix genres with crime, and I thought vampires, it was just a different take on vampires was very important, to make them gritty and street level, and then also kind of make it science-based, too, where the vampirism was more science-based, which it has become a little more common now, but it felt more original at the time.
Yes, I recall that. There was a doctor, right, who was investigating the nature of vampire blood, right?
Right.
Why do you think, I don't know, you can't speak for Iverson, I guess, but what attracts you to vampires, telling the vampire story?
I think it was a way of doing something that had powers, had some sort of strength. She had super strength, but it wasn't, she wasn't going to go and put on a costume, which doesn't interest me that much.
Right.
I don't think that, it interests me to read it, but it doesn't interest me as a writer because people just aren't going to do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was mostly, I was interested in the fact, I also liked the fact that she was torn, and I liked, she didn't want to be a vampire, and I thought that was very interesting. Certainly kind of Blade-like, but she also was a police officer, and she basically continued her role as a police officer as a vampire, and she policing vampires.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was it was an interesting approach to it that, certainly sustained it for quite a while.
Yeah, I think that's an intriguing aspect of the vampire story is, does it change you as a person? Obviously, it changes you in a physiological sense, but does it change your very nature? Are you going to still be a protector and someone who wants to get the bad guy like she does? Or do you become a monster altogether and just, hurt anyone who gets in your way?
And she was a notoriously violent person before. And I think that the vampirism actually tamed her and made her better at controlling her temper. Slowly but surely she learned. And certainly seeing other people become a vampire and seeing them completely losing it,
mm-hmm.
I think it made her, she became a better person because of it.
I agree. Interesting contradiction now that put your finger on it, because I guess she realized as a vampire her extremes could get very extreme, and she realized she had to rein that in, whereas as a human you can punch somebody and it might not be fatal, but as a vampire it could be instantly fatal.
Yeah.
So you kind of had to restrain yourself. Why do you think vampires persist? So every year there seems to be more stories, movies, books, comic books, so forth.
It's romantic.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone wants to survive death,
mm-hmm.
and to do it in such a great way, or seemingly great way. It's just, in so many ways, vampires are torn because they have to kill people, but their lives seem, more adventurous and more, their lives were better than they were before,
mm-hmm.
just with that terrible, terrible thing they have to do to other people.
Small things like that.
Yeah. Like
that. And how did you meet Mike Iverson?
At work, basically.
So what was work? What were you doing together?
Oh, I was a display artist for Tower Records.
Oh, okay.
I used to do their big artwork displays. I'd paint them and that sort of stuff. And I was looking for an assistant, and Mike, who has degrees, and was just looking for a side job.
Mm-hmm.
He just moved to Phoenix, and didn't really know anyone, and that's basically how we met.
And how was your collaboration? It seemed that you guys, from reading it, seemed like you worked well together. Is that the case?
Yeah, we're still business partners now. We have a design company, so.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, I didn't know that. Okay, great.
Yeah, we get along great,
So what do you guys do today? What's your work entail today?
We do some book design, and we do just basically logos and any kind of design work like that.
Oh, okay.
But we were trying to specialize more in books, but that's always, that hasn't been, as productive as I would have probably liked.
Oh.
Mostly we get lots of work doing, just anything a designer does, logos and ads and flyers and posters and everything. We've been doing that for years.
Oh, okay. When you write comic books, what's the process like? Because I've never written a comic book. What do you have to do? How do you, do you outline it from beginning to end? And
yeah, that's funny you say that, because I've been struggling with outlining books, and I've learned that with a comic you have to outline it. For me, I had to outline it in such a detailed way. And I got so used to writing that way, and now that I'm writing novels, I just don't think novels are as effective if you outline them too much.
Mm-hmm.
At least the way my mind works. It doesn't, it's a completely different way of writing. But back when I was doing comics, I would outline it in a very detailed sense, you know, from beat to beat. From, you know, I would start off with, like, here's, like, you know, whatever the scenes are, the basic scenes of the issues. And then I'd break it down to pages. I want this to happen on this page, that page. And then I would eventually, once I started scripting it, I would go to, from panel to panel to panel. And I was pretty detailed with Mike. He didn't need me to be super detailed. But mm-hmm. It's because, you know, I'm kind of anal retentive. I had to be. So I did. But he was very good at, he's a really good storyteller. He was very good at fixing my mistakes and certainly with the action sequences, because he knows a lot about that sort of stuff with, you know, fighting and that sort of stuff. So he did I certainly nailed all that down and I made sure all of it was there, but he did a good job of making it better.
Oh, so he intuited what you wanted to get across visually.
Right, and also just kind of improved it, said, well, if she's this good of a fighter, she wouldn't do it this way.
Okay.
He has some knowledge of it that I certainly don't have. So that was very helpful, too.
And so when you write a panel, for example, do you just write, like, how do you format? Is there a way you format a script for comic books, or is it just whatever is unique to your style of writing out of an outline?
It really depends a lot on what the artist wants, but I write it like a film script with stage direction, you know, okay, or describing the panel, and then it'll have dialogue underneath it. I actually used Final Draft, the screenplay format, probably for the last three quarters of Vigil. Before that, I was writing it by hand, but writing a notebook. But by then, the screenwriting program made it much, much easier for me.
Okay. And he picked up, like, before you even started the first issue, did you sit down together and just collaborate on what, like a Bible for the book, like, you know, what the vampire powers are and what the kind of story you wanted to tell and all that? Or
we always thought that's how writers and artists were supposed to work together. So that's what we really tried to do early on with another book series we did before that never went anywhere. But we just wanted to sit down, we'll just plot the book together like George Perez and Marv Wolfman used to do, or Chris Claremont and John Byrne. They'd plot together, and then the artist would go off and draw it. That's what we thought we were going to do. But it turned out that, you know, we just worked better with me giving Mike a full script. And then he could kind of, you know, then he'd do thumbnails from there and you know, little sketches and bring it up. When it came to the vampire stuff, a lot of it I made up as I was going along.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. Because I knew that I wanted to be realistic, and I knew that I knew that she, you know, wasn't going to, she'd have to get blood to survive. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it kind of, as soon as you put it in this hard boiled world, things started just appearing to me. Certainly, the vampire virus thing mm-hmm. was something I was definitely making up as I went along.
Oh, okay. Well, it didn't seem that way when I was reading it. It seemed like you had it all planned out. And you had several miniseries, which is great. Did you expect that? Did you say it was going to be only a certain amount of issues and then we're done with it? Or did you always plan, this sequence of events and then we're going to start a new story with another sequence of events?
Well, we sold it to the first company, Innovation. It was designed to be a four-issue book. Mm-hmm. The first storyline was going to be four issues. But then they decided they were having success selling things, instead of 24 pages, selling them as 48 pages. Mm. So they wanted to do two 48 pages. So that was fine. And then after that, we couldn't get the next one. We couldn't get them to commit to a whole other miniseries, even though it did pretty well. Mm-hmm. So we just started doing issues.
Okay.
And then by that point, that company went out of business, and we went to the next company, and they pretty much let us do what we wanted. But we kind of stayed to that 48-page format till the very end, mm-hmm. or towards the very end. And then the last series had, you know, we kind of did it in, like, you know, 24-page issues just to get it out faster. We kind of wanted to get it, not put so much time between the issues, because it was I thought doing the 48 pages was taking too long to get issues out. Mm-hmm. We're doing them every 9 months instead of, you know, every couple of months, you know. But that was kind of the way the publisher liked it, you know.
Oh, okay. And then you brought, I can't recall exactly how the series concluded, but it concluded the way you wanted to, or you were cut off, or?
Oh, no, it was completely the way we wanted to. Okay. It was exactly the way, it was exactly what we wanted, and I knew it needed to come to an end, and I think it ended nicely, you know, for what I wanted. And I thought eventually I would come back to it and do some more with it, but I never did, at least not with the comic storyline, so I never... We just never really got to it, even though I did have some ideas for stories. But it ended well enough to me where it felt like going back to it, at least at that point, kind of ruined it, you know.
And then you switched to novella, right? A novella form of the same character.
Yeah, that was like just a couple years ago. I'd written two other novels when we did another comic series for a while. And then I wanted to write some books and... Mm-hmm. I started writing the books, and those books were incredibly complicated to write, and they have 8 characters, and they were so complicated, I decided after I got done with those two, I needed to simplify things and just work on something. So I thought, maybe I'll just take the Vigil stories and just write them again just the way I remember them, because that's one person, and I can do it in Grace's voice, which I knew I could handle really well, and I wanted to just do that. And do them as novellas, and we'll release them in between the other books and do that sort of thing. Well, that kind of ballooned, and I started writing the first one, and next thing I knew, I was changing the story, and I was doing something new, and I couldn't really, you know, stop. And I just started writing those instead of what I was working on at the time, and because Grace is a very addictive character. I really respond to her. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, she's very compelling. She's no wallflower. She definitely demands your attention. Oh.
And it was interesting writing the book again. When I first wrote the other book, I was 25.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, and then when I started this one, I was 45. And it was like, whoa, you know. I was taking it from a different perspective, you know. And I think Grace maybe was a little more mature in this one. And it kind of, you know, yeah, changed it. I also, in the first one, I set up a world for Grace. And then I immediately put her on the run, and she starts globetrotting.
Mm-hmm.
And this one I thought it might be interesting to do something, because it's in prose, it's completely different. I could start again and take it from a different perspective and keep her in Los Angeles a little longer.
Yeah, that's what I remember from reading your novellas. This seemed very focused in L.A., whereas the other comic books went all over.
Right. And I knew I wouldn't continue the novellas for very long. It would just be telling one story just to kind of, you know, I wanted to work in first person more in my novels, and I thought I'd use Grace because I her character is very solid in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically those were as much of experiments as anything. And then when I did them, they turned out good. And Mike and I decided, he said, "We got to release this." So I said, "Okay," because it was mostly just for me, just practice, you know.
Oh, I see. It's a warm up.
Kinda.
You mentioned age. Writing it at a younger age versus writing it at an older age, did your priorities change? Did your sense of things change? Did age play a role in that?
Oh, definitely. She was more violent in a way that she didn't think about the repercussions of her violence at all early on in the comic. She was very violent. It was also from a different time in comics where comics were a lot more violent back in the 90s. We were certainly embracing that to the full. And as I got older, I found myself more uncomfortable with the violence. I certainly couldn't write it again. I'm not upset with anything we put in there because it certainly fits with her character and stuff. But when I was doing it again, I had trouble writing that. So I think I made her thinking more about what she did. And she certainly, in the novella series, she definitely gets more violent. She gets violent at times, mm-hmm. but she's pushed to it. You know, and it's a last resort more than a first resort.
Right. Yes, when she went into that building, the headquarters, and
right, then she goes nuts.
What was different for you from writing a comic book panel versus writing a novella? What was different? Was it just different? Was it more challenging? Less challenging?
It's a thousand times more challenging for me, and I don't mean that as the comic writing is easy, but with comic writing, you have someone's finishing the work for you. A novel is you're writing something that's meant to be finished. Someone's going to read that eventually. Mm-hmm. When I write a script, no one's really going to ever read that other than Mike
mm-hmm.
or whatever artist I'm working with. And with novels, it's very hard. And actually, it took me probably a good 5 years to change my writing style. Even my first two books were more, you know, in third-person objective, where they were kind of distant. For some reason, I wasn't in the head of the head. I didn't want to be in the heads of the characters. I just kind of wanted to describe what was happening, because that's how I trained myself to write. And it took me a long time, a million words writing, to where I felt like I was getting good enough. And even then, even when I thought I was, it's still, I think just now I'm starting to get to the point where I can have a handle when I'm separate writing. I think going back to writing comics now would be very, very difficult for me.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Maybe I could do it. I'm sure I could do it because I know how.
Mm-hmm.
But thinking, I know that sometimes, even when I was writing the novella, I was trying to plot ahead like I did with Vigil, and I really couldn't do it. Like, I had these ideas that she was going to have big fight sequences and stuff, and then you start writing it as a novel, and fight sequences just don't work in a book.
Right, not the way they do in
a novel. Not in the same way, at least. Or we could do this big, you know, 6-7 pages of her having a karate fight with an army general or something. You know, we could do that really in a way that's very dramatic, but that's not dramatic in a book in the same way.
That's a good point, yeah. I think that would just wear out a reader if they had to read paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs of a fight.
I know I'd be skipping over if I was reading. So, yeah.
That's a good point. Also, the point you made earlier about where you're really not in the head of the character so much when you're writing a comic book, because it's very visual. You're a bit removed. But when you're writing a novel, you're much more into the character's head. Is that right? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, that's true. And in Vigil, we started off, the book had a first-person narration in it, like, you know, detective stories kind of did. Mm-hmm. But then once she got connected to her love interest, once she had someone to talk to, we didn't need the first person anymore, and that kind of went away.
Mm.
Until the end, where he kind of disappears, and then the first person starts to come back again. Because I realized she has no one to talk to, and it's not dramatic. You need, you know, if she can't talk to anyone, she has to talk to herself.
Right.
And Grace was just a character that's really easy to get into her head for me. I can't explain it. It was strange because it's been like, you know, 12 years since I'd written her, but it was like I'd never even stopped.
Oh, wow. That's great. Was there someone who inspired you? Did you watch TV shows or read novels that helped you create this character? Does someone inspire Grace?
No, I don't know anyone that's like Grace. You start to see... I've seen characters who are similar to her coming back, like Starbuck on the new Battlestar Galactica. Sometimes I think, oh, she's a lot like Grace. But Grace wasn't a hard drinker like her, but she was she could – I saw that, but this was after Vigil. But I rarely see it. I actually love it when I see a character that's that strong, because it's rare to see any – even a male character that strong. It's just, you know – she knows what she thinks and what she wants, and she'll just knock you right over to get it.
Yeah, she's not very compromised.
Person like that can exist in the real world.
Yeah.
I mean, interesting characters don't exist. People can't – you can't behave like that in the real world. But it's always fun to read someone who can say and do anything.
Is that part of what you enjoyed writing about her, is that you didn't have that constraint?
Oh, yeah. I even have fantasies sometimes of starting a Twitter account under Grace's name and just writing her and having her react to the world. As much fun as that would be, it's like it wear me out because you'd be so busy yelling at everyone all the time. And coming up with clever insults, you know.
Well, one last thing about the comic book that I'm thinking about. It was in black and white, I think, for all the issues, or at least the early ones. Was that a conscious decision, or was that because of economy? Or?
Oh, the black and white comics were super hot back in that time period. You know, that was why, and that's, you know, doing color. When we finally started doing color comics, we were doing them on the web because it's so hard. It's just super expensive to print color comics. Unless you have a big following, it's really hard to keep it going. I don't know. If Vigil had been in color, I don't think it would have lasted.
Oh, really? Oh, that's it.
Yeah, I just don't think it could have. And I think with black and white, it's considerably. It's a considerable price cut. So it didn't have less of a profit margin, so it could survive even when in the 90s or mid-90s when comics were kind of dying again.
Mm-hmm.
They occasionally die every decade or so, but never for very long. But they dip, and certainly people like us got squeezed out, you know.
Well, I thought the black and white served the story well, though. It was a
noir
kind of story. So.
And I think that might have had a big effect on why we you know, why we went noir with it.
Mm-hmm. You know? Oh, so you played it up then. You took advantage of it rather than...
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Very good. And at the time, can you recall, were there comic books that you read, were a fan of, or writers that you were a fan of? Or today? Do you continue reading comics today? Or?
Some. Yeah, I was a big Frank Miller fan at the time. This was pre-Sin City, but, you know, the Daredevil and that sort of stuff. And I loved Nexus, Mike Maron and Steve Rude's comic. And when I was a younger kid, the Teen Titans, Wolfman and Perez was the greatest thing ever. I mean, I just lived for it. But I was a big fan of those sorts of things. Steve Rude's art, Mike's very inspired by Steve Rude's artwork. And it, especially early on, it had kind of that feel. It got grittier as time went on, but it certainly had that feel. I mean, that's one of the things when I first saw his artwork, I go, you ever heard of an artist named Steve Rude? Because it really reminded me of this art.
Oh, wow.
So
I'm not familiar with him. I'll have to look him up.
He's really beautiful. He's one of the greatest technical artists I've ever seen. Certainly in comics. Very few people draw as well as he does.
Oh, that's great. Mm. What are some titles that you know of right now?
That I like right now?
Yeah.
Well, I like all of Ed Brubaker's titles a lot. I read everything he does. I'm doing the... I like Warren Ellis a lot. I like certain books. I'm kind of interested in seeing what Brian Bendis does on Superman. Because I think that's a really interesting...
Oh, that's right. He recently moved to DC, right?
Yeah. I would have figured he went to do Batman, but the Superman really intrigues me. I mean, someone like him who has a different storytelling style than... Mm-hmm. That I'm intrigued by that sort of thing.
Did you read Bendis? I think it was Bendis and Maleev when they did Daredevil together.
Oh yes, that's blew me away.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
That's the high watermark of his work.
I thought that was a great collaboration.
Yeah, I love Maleev's artwork. I love the detail of his work. It's just brilliant.
Yeah, it was great. It was different. It was contradictory in a way. It seemed like it was the characters were like frozen, but they had such action to them at the same time. I don't know how to explain it, but
I think he uses photo reference a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and that Mike did too, but it never seemed like it with Mike. But he always used photo reference. We had several Grace models over the years.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. But he really believes in photo reference. And actually, on our later series, I got him to stop using it, and I think his art suffered for it. I think I really wish it would have kept going. I didn't want to do it because it took so long, because taking photos all the time. But in the end, you could see it was really helping his artwork in a way that I didn't understand at the time.
And now, shifting gears, what are you working on now?
I'm working on a novel that's... Oh, I hesitate to say. It's basically a superhero novel. It takes place in the 40s during the Dust Bowl, and or the 40s after the Dust Bowl. And it's right at the beginning of World War II, and it's basically looking at the early days of the superhero, because I have a lot of issues with superheroes and how they're portrayed, and I thought I needed to take them back to their roots and kind of analyze them a little bit. You know, it's not a costume thing. It's about a boy who gains these powers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say too much.
Sure, I understand. I appreciate.
And he basically, you know, the government finds out about him and they want to use him as a war machine. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's basically that. It's about a boy that returns from the dead, and he comes back very, very, very powerful. It's a Superman analogy, but not, you know, because it doesn't have costumes and that sort of thing. It's called Child of the Gods. That's what it's called right now. But I've written it three times, so I'm trying to get the right tone. I wrote it in third person the first time, and then I tried moving it to a modern day the second time. That's why it's been 2 years. And then I didn't like either one of them, so I'm taking it back to the 40s. But I'm writing it in first person this time instead of third person. And it's got like four different characters who kind of meet the kid throughout the life. And I'm hoping it's working pretty well. Hoping I'm skilled enough to handle four different characters in one book, you know.
Oh, it can definitely be challenging, yeah.
But it's like four, it sticks with the character for like 10 chapters, and then it moves to another chapter, and then another character, and then another character. I don't think it would work very well if you switch off all the time.
Right, like alternate. You mean like one? You know, the next chapter is a different character. The next chapter is a different character. Yeah.
I think that would be difficult, at least for me. So I'm keeping it separate, where there's a journey through the book, and as this character takes prominence, they'll take over the narration.
Oh, okay.
Well, and I like the idea of narration. The book was, when I went back and read that first draft, I was seeing the first person in the. It seemed like it wanted to be first person. I was just reading it and kind of see it. But the main reason I didn't do it is because I was scared that I couldn't. Doing four individual voices is a difficult thing to pull off. For me, and they have to really, because you not only have to make them sound different and think different, you have to change your writing style. You know, they can't use your writing style. You have to have a writing style for them.
Yes, yeah, that is challenging because ideally, and I don't think I've achieved this quite yet, or maybe I have, I don't know, but, you know, you want it so you wouldn't even have to indicate explicitly which character you're narrating. It would just come out of the writing style.
Right.
Yeah, that would be great. So when you're writing that first draft, at what point in that first draft did you realize it wasn't working?
Not until I reread it, because I don't think about it too much. I was just kind of punching through it really fast.
Mm-hmm.
I think I wrote this one in like the first draft in like 2.5 months, which is really fast because it's, you know, 120,000 words.
Oh, wow. That is fast.
But I was just doing like 2,500 words a day, just really pushing it every day. And I think that was a huge mistake because you could just see there was times where nothing makes sense what I was writing when I went back. So I had some people tell me not to write slowly, try to just push through and see how you did it. Because I didn't plot the book before, and I really didn't know, other than a beginning scene, where exactly it was going till it was, you know, going.
Mm-hmm.
Till it was there. And there was things, a lot that doesn't make sense, which I think is normal in a first draft, but
okay.
It was too much for me, personally.
Mm-hmm.
And this time I've been slowing it down, trying to stick to more like 1,000 words a day.
Oh, okay.
And referring to the other draft, but I'm not using much of it. That original draft, I'm still referring to it, but
mm-hmm.
I'm basically, you know, starting over again.
Did the structure change at all between drafts, or you kept that pretty much?
Oh, it did. It did when I made it a modern day story. It completely changed.
Mm-hmm.
But because, you know, it's the world is different, so someone comes back with superpowers now,
mm-hmm.
it would be less. Back then, I think it would be more fantastical. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It would be, there's more magic back then than there would be now, at least in my personal opinion. So I was changing it quite a bit there. And this story is also more personal. It's very much based on my family and stuff like that. And I've never written anything personal before at all.
Oh.
So I found that very difficult to open up completely, you know.
I was going to ask you about that. Was it easier or harder? But it sounds like it's harder.
It's harder for me.
Uh-huh.
But then when I read the other things I've written, they're definitely... It's very personal. You can just, when I look back at it now, I see Vigil, I see, oh, that's you there. You know, you can see all the parts that are you, but I was never willfully writing about myself. And this one I'm definitely trying to.
Oh, okay. Now, in any of these drafts, do you have a critique group? Is there someone you share your work with that gives you feedback?
I have a friend who does that, and certainly with Mike, the old artist, he definitely reads everything I do, and I have several people I talk to. I do not have a critique group. I'm pretty antisocial. I wish I did. But I have a friend who's a professor of creative writing in English, but a professor of English, but she's really great. She's been such a help with my writing. I've known her for years, and she's really helped me get through to, you know, changing from being a comic writer to a novelist.
Oh, great.
Fledgling novelist. But she says, you know, I really should be her worst student ever because I'm not really her student and I'm also a pain. And she's been very helpful to me, pointing me in the right direction. It's always hard dealing with people I can have a big ego, especially with my work, and I don't like hearing, you know, I want to do what I want to do.
Right.
The more I write, the more humble I get.
Well, that's good.
Because you have to, because you're just...
I personally believe that.
Every book you do, it just gets harder the next time. It doesn't. Most things you do, you get better at it. It should get easier, but with writing, it's never gotten easier for me.
Well, I do think you need someone to push back on you because, you know, I think you get better work that way. You know, someone who's competent, someone you can trust. You don't just take anyone's opinion, but I mean, I think you do need a sparring partner, you know.
Yep. Especially, and I've known Lorraine for years, and she's worked with, she was there the whole time we were doing our comics, too, so she knows, you know. Sometimes it's difficult for me to, I really don't care what people think in general, which is strange as a writer. But you kind of need to a certain point. Again, that's part of the humility where you need to care what people think. You know, people need to understand it. People need to do that, which I think my stuff's always been pretty clear. But, you know, it can be clearer. Everything can always be better, you know.
Right. You might fall in love with a line, but it's too tortured for the average reader to get their hands around it. And you have to let it go. Or you know.
I don't know about you, but that's the way with me. As soon as every time I have a problem with something, it's almost always solved by cutting something. Getting rid of some other piece, you know. Especially when you're a writer, you always want to be clever. You always want to.
Oh, yes.
You know, those are usually the lines that have to go.
Yes, I have this obsession of having every line just like be this beautiful, lyrical. And it can't be that way every time.
No.
You have to be clear first, I think. So.
Yeah, it's all about storytelling. That's all that matters.
Mm-hmm. And do you recall Lorraine's her name? Do you recall any specific tips she gave you that you could share?
Yeah. She was very big on me. You know, I have to think about that. It's hard to say, you know. Well, the first thing she did was, strangely enough, she read, you know, I read a chapter I did of my first book. And she said, oh, I like it. She goes, is there, really nicely, is there a reason why you wrote it in present tense? And I'm like, did I write it in present tense? I mean, I didn't even conceive that I was doing anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that you write scripts in present tense. And I said, no, I don't know why I wrote present tense. You know, I didn't know why. And she said, I think you should try this sort of book in past tense. And that was a very big help. A lot of when I wrote comics, there wasn't a lot craft involved.
Mm-hmm.
I was so young, I didn't know what I was doing. I just kind of had an idea, and I just did.
Mm-hmm.
But as you start writing a book, you know, there's so much craft involved in it. And I don't think I knew, because I don't have a degree in English. I mean, I didn't go to school for writing.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really know any of that stuff. And I was doing everything on instinct.
Right, you intuited the rules, right.
Right, from reading. That's how most people learn to write anyways, is from reading.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I didn't understand enough. And one time I was writing, I wasn't keeping my objective point of view well enough, and she gave me all these handouts she gives her students, which I thought was very funny. She explaining voice to me, and I'm like, okay. I don't know how well I would have taken that 10, 15 years ago, but they were very, very helpful, those handouts.
The more mature Arvin can take it, right?
Oh, the younger Arvin would have thrown a fit. You're telling me what to do? But, you know, she's a very good writer herself, and, yeah.
So, oh, good. I'm glad you met her.
Yeah. Known her since I was 18, so.
Oh, wow. That's a good time. Now, when this book is finally complete, and I'm sure it's going to be a great, great read, what do you tend to do with it? Do you tend to query agents? Or are you going to self-publish? What do you expect to do
with it? The first two, we have a publishing company that's part of our design firm.
Oh, okay. Okay.
First three, Vigil and the other two science fiction books I wrote, those were self-published, or, you know, our company that we have that did it, does other things too. But with this book, I really wanted to query agents and try and sell it, publish. I think it's the work's getting to the point where I've got to do that. And I think as soon as you're learning how difficult it is to self-publish and get attention, mm-hmm. it's not, you know, you're just constantly having to work all the time to get attention.
Yes.
It would be nice to have some help with that.
I was going to ask you that. How do you promote your work right now? Do you use social media? Do you just go to conferences?
It's been 2 years since I had the last book out, but it's been about a year and a half, but 2 years since I finished. But basically that's what I've used so far. I found that signings, we did hundreds and hundreds of signings for Vigil, mm-hmm. and they didn't really help that much.
Oh, really? Oh, that's surprising.
No, it was mainly just sitting there having to explain to yourself what you're doing all the time.
Oh, man.
But it's, you know, but it, I didn't mind doing them, and some of them worked really well, especially when you got to do them with, you know, big comic book artists and stuff, and you're kind of with them. Those were very helpful, especially getting to know other creative people. But the we never found them to be that helpful, so I haven't done that. We thought about hiring a publicist for this book, but we just didn't. Mm-hmm. So this one, if I can't sell it, then we'll definitely self-publish it.
Okay, know? All right.
But I'd like to, but it's a part of a potential series, so I think it's very marketable, and I think we'll see.
Oh, well, I hope it is.
Yeah.
You touched upon signings and everything. Have you gone to comic book conventions and the like?
Oh, way back when.
Yeah.
That's
mm-hmm. What was that like? I've never been to one myself.
Oh, you've never been to a comic
book?
No. Oh, wow. They're wild, especially San Diego Con is just crazy. Uh-huh. Went like 18 years in a row there. Uh-huh. Haven't gone for a while, but, you know, those are just really fun experiences. You know, they're expensive experiences. But it was fun meeting people because we met a lot of people who read our book who we didn't really encounter on, certainly during local signings and that sort of stuff. It was always difficult. We did them around the state and around the Southwest and stuff. But it was the Comic Cons that, but there was really only one big one at the time when we were doing Vigil. But we make big productions. We had booths and we make a big production every time we went out there and had a nice, you know, a couple times we got close enough to the DC and Marvel booth where we got a lot of traffic coming by us.
Oh, that's great. Location.
And we sell quite a lot of books then, too, so we mostly broke even. Those went pretty well. But, one of the things I always saw at the comic convention is the poor, lonely novelist sitting at the table at the comic convention. Right. They don't get quite the amount of attention. We saw Larry Niven. I think it was Larry Niven. Oh, I hate to help. Oh, I'm not wrong there. But we saw lots of people there. You know, there was quite a few artists novelists who would come there. And certainly the famous ones like Larry Niven would get lots of attention. But, we have a big comic on here, but I've never really wanted to do it because I just don't think novelists really, you know, it's a different kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you ever serve on a panel at one of these comic cons?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It was a funny one, Women in Comics, for some reason. I got put on that panel. So I was up there with all these independent women who were looking at me like, what are you doing here? But I got to be on one with Kevin O'Neill, who's the co-creator of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and Martial Law. And it was an anti-hero panel, I think. So that was pretty good. I did a few. Yeah, those were fun. Those were fun to do. Which is weird that I would do them because I'm not, again, I'm super shy. So,
right.
But I love the idea. That was my favorite part of going to conventions was any chance I wasn't sitting at the table, I was going and listening to panels and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because back then, that was the only way to get to hear creative artists and writers talk about their work. Now, you can hear them anywhere now.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you listen to podcasts? Do you go to book signings? Okay. How do you keep up with fellow novelists?
Mostly on Twitter and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Yeah, just listen. I'm more of a lurker. I post some, but not a lot.
Okay.
And mostly that way, you know.
All right. Well, I'd like to wrap up with just how people can find you. Do you have a website? What's your Twitter handle? Things like that.
It's at Arvin Loudermilk, and the website is arvinloudermilk.com.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining me. I wish you great success with your forthcoming novel. I can't wait to read it.
Thank you.
Well, have a great day, and I'll follow up with you later. Take care.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Bye.